It's an honor, it's a pleasure to be with you today. Today being a special day as we are easing into a very special, meaningful week. In particular, in my mind, is Yom HaZikaron. And if I may humbly dedicate the zechut, the learning of the Torah that we're doing this morning, should be a merit for the neshamot of all of the brave soldiers, men and women, who have fallen in Eretz Yisrael, who have given their lives and paid the ultimate price so that we can be the beneficiaries of having the wonderful land of Eretz Yisrael, which we could never take for granted. And so we appreciate their sacrifices and we remember them today. A number of people came up to me as we were about to start that mentioned they were intrigued by the title of this morning's lecture, The Curious Marriage of Rabbi and Mrs. Akiva. And I will tell you that I delivered a form of this presentation in a community a number of years ago, and it was part of a Shavuos lineup. And of course in Shavuos there's a lot of traffic, people are coming and going, and I noticed that the presenter before me had a pretty decent crowd, but there was a torrent of people that were lining up as my presentation was about to begin to all come in. And at first, of course, my ego got, you know, all excited, thinking, wow, they all came to hear me. And soon after, before I began, I looked at the schedule, and I noticed that the presenter before me was a guest rabbi from Israel, whose name was Rabbi Shalom Akiva. And so everyone was hearing what he said first, but then they wanted to hear about the curious marriage of Rabbi and Mrs. Akiva. But I have a particular interest in relationships in regards to marriage. I'm also, in addition to being a rabbi, I'm also a social worker, and in the PhD that I'm currently working on as a doctoral candidate here at Wurzweiler Yeshiva University, I'm focusing on the interplay between rabbis and the divorce process, and to look at what impact rabbis can have, either positive or negative, on the post-divorce outcomes and well-being of people who go through the divorce process. And so in the therapy that I do and the writing that I do, I focus a lot on how can we improve the quality of relationships. And so as I was looking through the Gemara, looking through our tradition, intrigued and fascinated by so many different stories, both with positive lessons and some others, Rabbi Akiva's just stood out. Is this a paradigm of a marriage that I would turn to my daughter and say, sweetheart, I hope one day you have as beautiful a home and marriage as Rabbi and Mrs. Akiva. We give our children a lot of brachos. I just don't know that that's one that we would give. And perhaps after this morning's presentation, maybe we'll look at it a little bit differently. Maybe we will, in fact, bless our children to have a home, a love, and a commitment similar to the Akivas. But I'd like to begin with, if you would refer to the source sheets in front of you, source number one, an article from 2011's Wall Street Journal. And the article is entitled, The Dance of Marriage, Who Does What? And it's just an excerpt, but essentially the article goes on to say how the author is a busy wife and mom, and she's got a deadline of an article that she's trying to get out, and she just can't do it. And she's frantic, and she turns to her husband, and in the most supportive way, he tends to her and says, let me help. Let's get your thoughts clear. And helps get her started in the process. And sure enough, she's able to sit there as long as it takes at the computer until her article is complete. And the story goes on. It concludes talking about how they wake up in the next morning and there was a snowstorm overnight. It snowed that night. In the morning, we raced to get the kids dressed and fed. The snow needs to be scraped from the car, I said to Joe. We were both exhausted and cranky. He could have said, but never would, that I should scrape the car because he had helped me with my story the night before. He never would say that because that isn't why he had helped me. In every marriage, there are things we do for the ledger, and then there are things we do for love. And it's an interesting jumping off point to think about the transactional and relational components that we have within a marriage. There are some things we do because we keep score, and then there are some things that It's just, this is what it's about. We're in love, we're in a marriage, we're in a relationship. And when I was younger, I used to think that, well, a marriage is, a good marriage, is a healthy partnership of 50-50. I couldn't have been more wrong. And I'm still learning that on a daily basis. But the problem with a 50-50 paradigm is that if either spouse is having a bad day, if you're only bringing 40% to the table that day, at best, the marriage will be at 90%. But if you have a relationship where each person is bringing 100% of themselves, and we have to talk about what that means, 100% of what? To do what? To what end? But if each brings 100%, then even if you're each having a terrible day and you can only bring 50%, the marriage as an institution, the home, the bias is still strong as it's able to function at 100% capacity. So we're going to now delve into Rabbi Akiva, but I will ask you to indulge me in that this is not going to go chronologically. We're going to start off with the middle of the story. We already have questions. That's why we're here. Things about Rabbi Akiva's marriage that seem strange. So we jump into source number two. And the story tells us as follows. This is a Gemara from Ksubos Daf Samach Gimel. Rabbi Akiva goes away to yeshiva. He's sitting, he's learning, and after his 12 years in yeshiva, what happens? He comes home, and he returns with him proudly, escorted by 12,000 Talmidim. If you thought it's hard to get to the Kiddush after davening because there's a crowd of people, imagine 12,000 people that are all lined up, and Rabbi Akiva is marching his way to his home. And as he gets to his door, Shamalahu Saba de Kamarla, he overhears that there's an older person having a conversation with his wife. He's standing at the doorstep. And what's the conversation? This person says to Rachel, or Mrs. Akiva, as we'll refer to her for now, Ad kama kamedaberet almanos chayim, how long are you going to live the life of a living widow? You're a widow, but your husband's still alive. It's a terrible trap to be in. And Amrale, she responds, Ile diditais, if I had my druthers, Yosef Treis Rishni Achrini, I would let him learn an additional 12 years. To which Rabbi Akiva then says, Amar, well, Bereshus Kavidna, I have her permission. So he turns on his heel. Hadar Azav Yosef Trey Srey Shni Achrini Vivei Rav, goes back to yeshiva and learns for an additional 12 years. I ask you, did he really have permission? Imagine, if you will, I'm working in the office one night, swamped with work, and I call home and I say to my wife, who's juggling a bunch of kids and homework and dinner, and let's say she just had a baby, let's say she had twins, let's say she had triplets, she had quadruplets. Okay, are her hands full? Okay, and I say to her, honey, it's tax season, and I can't get out of the office. And she's so amazing. She's so supportive. And you know what she says to me? Take as much time as you need. I said, thank you, honey, I love you, you're the best. The next day, she doesn't hear from me. Day after that, she doesn't hear from me. 3 days later, I call her, and she goes, where are you? I'm in Vegas. Vegas? What are you doing in Vegas? Well, didn't you tell me take as much time as I need? That would probably be the last conversation they ever have. When a wife says take as much time as you need, does it really mean I have your permission to go spend a couple of days hanging out with my buddies in Vegas? When she says, oh, I'm so proud of him, I would be happy for him to take an additional 12 years, was she truly saying, I want him to turn around? Furthermore, you have to ask, why did Rabbi Akiva not just, I'm home, honey, how are you? Good to see you. I understand, I overheard. Would it be okay? Let's have dinner, and then tomorrow I'll head out on the road again. Does it not sound like it's a breach of basic menschlichkeit? To walk in the door and say hello to your beloved, who is the one who's supporting you while you're in kolo? Where's the Hakaras HaTov? Where's the basic Menschlichkeit? Where's the Ben Adam L'Chavero? Frankly, on the surface, I am disappointed with what Rabbi Akiva did in this story. He picks up, he turns around, you know, I'll call you in 12 years from now. Doesn't seem like a role model. So now what we're going to do, as you can hear, there's some skepticism in my voice. We're taking a cynical approach. And we're going to continue that paradigm in source number 3, where we're going to look at a critical read of the Talmud by an Israeli historian by the name of Daniel Boyarin, born in 1946. And in 1995, he published a book called Reading Sex in Talmudic Culture, of which he was looking at the stories from the Talmud through a more critical lens. And here's his take on the story of Rabbi Akiva. Source 3. The key to my reading is the name Rachel. The entire story of the romance of Rabbi Akiva and Rachel is generated in one root metaphor. Akiva is the shepherd and Rachel as the sheep. And the imagery that he's painting is that this is what we would call a power struggle. This is maybe an abusive relationship where one spouse is manipulating, taking advantage of the other. And the way that Boyarin is looking at this, it sounds like Rabbi Akiva is a horrible human being. Now, of course, we're going to come at this from a totally different perspective once we're able to shed some light on it. But you can see we're building the questions here, something about this perspective. He's the shepherd, he's in control, and she's the little Shepsula. She has no voice. In fact, in the Talmud, she doesn't even have a name. Hence the reason we're calling her Mrs. Akiva. Now, if we have to ask any child on the street, what is the legacy of Rabbi Akiva? What is the one thing that they teach you, the song that every kid is taught about what Rabbi Akiva said was the most important value of all the Torah? Ah, beautiful. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. What does Rabbi Akiva say? Zeklal gadol b'Torah, source number 4. That Rabbi Akiva was a staunch proponent of interpersonal relationships, of ben adam l'chavero, that the most important thing that a yid could do is treat their fellow with dignity, with care, with love, with respect. And Shuldig, can we please ask him to practice what he preaches? It doesn't seem to stim. It doesn't make sense. What he's doing in this story is in complete opposition with his primary legacy and teaching of v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Is it a fluke? Was it like maybe one day he got up and made that announcement of v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha zekla gadol b'Torah? And that was it? No. We look at source number 5. Rabbi Akiva is telling us now, Gemara tells a story of Rabbi Akiva in regards to the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. Let's read it inside. Gemara from Nedarim Daf Mem. Hayim Maisa b'Talmid Echad mitalmidei Rabbi Akiva, one of Rabbi Akiva's students, Shechalag, who was ill. And even though the next few words are almost parenthetical, they speak volumes. Lo nichnesu chachamim levakro. None of the sages came to visit this one student. You can ask, why does that need to be in the story? And I think it's important for us to recognize that too often, even in our own communities, we have people who are sick, people who are sitting shiva, people who have their tzaras, and lo nichnesu levakro. They get overlooked, they fall through the cracks. And we can't allow for people, any yachid, any individual, to fall through the cracks. And so the Gemara goes on and explains, v'nichnas Rabbi Akiva levakro, Rabbi Akiva thought it was necessary to leave the base medrash, to close his farm, and to go visit this one student. And the Gemara says that he swept the floor for the student, tended to his physical needs. He didn't sit and give a whole shiur, he didn't sit and do tehillim with him. He said, you need something to eat? I see there's tissues on the floor, can I pick them up? What, do you need me to run to the pharmacy? What do you need? And because of that, the Gemara says, Chaya, the student lived. Amar lo Rebbe Hechi Yasani. He told Rabbi Akiva, you saved my life. Yata Rabbi Akiva v'doresh, and Rabbi Akiva goes on to then teach, Kol mishe'ein mevaker cholim, one who does not visit the sick, ilu shofech damim, it is tantamount to spilling blood. It's a very harsh statement. But we see Rabbi Akiva is passionate about the importance of looking out for every individual. V'ahavta l'reich kamocha is not just a theoretical construct, but it's relevant, it's applicable, it's something we have to practice. So that's great. He taught it in yeshiva. He practiced it behind closed doors with his students. But this still doesn't explain his marriage. Wouldn't it be great if we could find some teaching of Rabbi Akiva that said, what's Rabbi Akiva's perspective on marriage? Source number six. Source number six tells the Gemara from Sota Daf Yud Zayin. Darish Rabbi Akiva. Ish v'isha zachu, when a man and woman are zoche, shechina b'nehem, the shechina, God's presence, rests amongst them. Lo zachu, however, on the opposite side of that, if they're not zachu, we haven't quite defined what that means, eish ochlas, and fire will consume them. So Rabbi Akiva seems to imply that there is a spiritual foundation to the couple, that it requires a certain zachus, and as we go on, you'll see the formation of that zachus, but it also has the divine, God's presence. God is a member of your household as well. And anyone who's ever been to a Sheva Brachos has heard the Dvar Torah as Rashi continues and explains what does it mean, Ish v'Isha, and Rashi says that if you look at the letters of Ish and Isha, it's the same root word, Aleph Shin, which is the word Esh. Man and woman, they're both fire. However, the Ish has the Yud, Isha has the Hey. You put the two together, the Yud and the Hey. When man and woman come together, B'Kedusha, with the Zechus, then you have the Shechina, Shruya Beinehem. However, if you remove God from a relationship, all you have is physicality and no spirituality, all you're left with in the home is fire. The relationship will eventually become consumed, is what Rabbi Akiva is telling us. Now again, if one were skeptical, one could say, look, I don't need to take marriage advice from Rabbi Akiva. He's the last person that should be telling me how to have a nice home, a nice marriage. Or perhaps his insight is of the greatest value. So, with a little bit of skepticism, we wonder, is Rabbi Akiva's perspective on marriage, that it's a spiritual construct, is that validated in the Torah? So, and even to ask further, is spirituality, pursuit of one's ruchnius, a valid reason for one to say, honey, I'll see you later. I'm going to Maariv. I'm going to Ashir. I'm going to Kola. Is that a valid reason? Because one feels the need to pursue ruchnius. So there is some foundation for that. We continue with source number seven. The Gemara in Yevamos Daf Samach Beis, Ditanya. Shlosha Dvarim Asa Moshe Midaito. There were three things that Moshe did on his own. V'skima Daito Dasa Malkum, to which the Almighty concurred. And the first one is Perash Min Aisha, that Moshe decided he was going to separate from his wife. Skip down to the Gemara where it says, what does that mean? My darish perish min isha. Amar. Moshe came up with the following rationale. Uma Yisrael shalo dibrei mam shchina elo fisha. Just like the Jewish people, which the Almighty spoke with them directly, but only for a moment. The kavalahem zman. And Hashem gave them a set time. Amra Torah. Al tikshol isha. You should separate. Don't touch your wife. 3 days. The Torah gave a set time to separate, even though it was just a moment where God spoke to the Jewish people. Ani, says Moshe, personally, me, shemiyuchad lidbar b'chol shah v'shah, where I am positioned to speak with God constantly, v'lo kava lizman, and God didn't say any amount of time that I should be separated. Alachas kama v'kama, it must be that because I'm always in dialogue with God, I should ergo always be separated from my wife. That was his rationale. A little risque. And Hashem said, yep, it's a good limud. Your logic is correct. So what we see is, yeah, there is some foundation to say that if a person is going to be immersed in a life of growth, of ruchnius, of spirituality, that a home life, while it cannot sometimes be a support, can also perhaps detract from one's pursuit of growth. So along comes the Gemara in the next source, number 8, in Kiddushin, a famous Gemara, Daf Chavtes Amud Beis. And the Gemara asks the following question. The question that I hear from a lot of the YU students that I speak to who are 22, 23, they're in learning, they're in smicha. It's the question of, should I start dating? And I counsel a lot of couples, or a lot of students and couples, but am I ready to start to get married? I still have 2 more years of smicha, I'm not ready, I want to focus, I don't want to be distracted, but I really want to get married and I don't want to push it off. And is there a right or wrong answer? Is it subjective or is it concrete? So the Gemara wrestles with this question. Yilmad Torah v'yachach yisa isha, should a person first learn and then get married? So the Gemara says, if you're able to, yeah. V'miyafshar lo below isha, however, if you can't sit and study, you can't, as they say, halk kap. Too distracted. Your head is elsewhere. You're just longing. You're pining for love. You want to be in a relationship. You want to be complete. You want to be whole. And therefore, I just can't sit and focus on a tosfos. So what does the Gemara say in that case? Yisa isha, get married, v'achar kach yilmad Torah. First get married, you'll learn Torah later. So what do we say? I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Shmuel. That's the halacha. Nosa isha v'achach yilmad Torah. A person should get married, according to the Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shmuel, get married first, and then you can sit and learn Torah. Now, along comes Rabbi Yochanan, who concludes this Gemara with a zinger. What's the zinger? Rabbi Yochanan says that a person who does so, rechayim, now do you know what the word rechayim means? Okay. If you want to make bread, you need flour. If you want to get flour, you need to take wheat. And if you want to be able to process the wheat, first you have to take the kernels, and you're going to need to grind them up into flour, into fine flour. And the process they used to do to do that was have a big, heavy grinding stone, and they would use that to grind the kernels into powder, into flour. That weight would be a reference to a rechayim. Okay? A very heavy object. Rabbi Yochanan says, one who wants to get married first and then learn Torah, rechayim b'tzavaro v'yasev b'torah, could you have a yoke, a grinding stone, something heavy upon your neck, and study Torah? Ouch. Does that not sound a little offensive? While I'm single, I can learn as much as I want. Get married, now I've got a grinding stone on my neck. I can't do anything. Now, I don't think he's referring to a wife as a burden. I think he's referring to the obligation and responsibility that one has. That if I'm married, I'm going to have a wife to take care of. I'm going to have children to feed. And how could I have my head completely in learning if I know that I have those other obligations that are weighing on me? And as it should be. So the Gemara concludes, "Lo pligi." It's not a machlokas. They both work. And there's a sense of autonomy empowered to us by the Gemara where it says, "Halan v'halahu," to each his own. If you're able to, great. If not, not. And so it's not for anyone to judge it. This is the right approach. He should be in kol. He shouldn't be in kol. She should be supporting. Everyone should do, calm down. Everyone do what works for you. And if it doesn't work for you, that's okay if it works for the next person. So we see again different paradigms for balancing one's learning and one's marriage. Now here it gets a little more interesting, because in source number 9 we're going to see how this paradigm actually gets transmitted as an intergenerational tradition. And one of the things that we do in the world of therapy is that we look to see at some of the function or dysfunction that may exist in a previous generation, and say, how could that potentially have been passed on to the next generation? Function or dysfunction? Gemara in Ksubas Daf Samach Gimel. And it tells us that Rabbi Akiva has a daughter. Now, wait a second. Wait a second. Rabbi Akiva has a daughter? When did this happen? All I know is he was away for 24 years. You want to tell me how he had a family? And so that one question, before we even read past the first word, is going to be the detour that we're required to take in order to understand what part one of the story. Remember we started with part two? What are we missing from the beginning of the story? The daughter of Rabbi Akiva. So what happened? Bartej Rabbi Akiva, Avda Le Levan Azai Hachi, his daughter did the same thing as her mother did with her husband, Ben Azai, where she sent him off, shipped him off to go learn. And the Gemara tells us, you ready for this? Behind Darmanish, and that's where the slogan comes from, says the Gemara, is a proverb that everyone knew. It was like a magnet that they had on the back of their bumper. Right? And what was the saying of the day? Rechila basar, rechila azla. A sheep follows a sheep. A sheep follows a sheep. And it's based upon this teaching that our tradition informs us that what was the name of Rabbi Akiva's wife? It was Rachel. That Rachila, Basra Rachila, that it was a play on words, that the daughter of Rachel, the sheep, followed the mother, Rachel, the sheep. Ka'ovda ima, kach avda barta, just like the mom did, so the daughter did as well. And it's a fascinating paradigm, that just like Rabbi Akiva followed, this is what I know a marriage to be. You get married, you send your husband off for decades, and that's life. So she went and did the same thing. And again, whether we want to call that function or dysfunction, the Gemara seems to say it was transmitted. The next generation followed suit. And the Gemara goes on now to tell us further. Another story of when this happened, albeit more traumatically or unsuccessfully. Rav Yosef Rei de Rava, Shadravu Levei Rav. Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, was sent by his father to go also to learn in yeshiva. And he was sent for a total of 6 years to go learn. Kihavatzlash Shni, when 3 years had passed, and it was Erev Yom Kippur, guess who walks in the door? Rav Yosef comes home 3 years short of what the plan was. So his father, who invested a lot in getting him into the best yeshiva, in setting him up and investing in him to go learn, Shama Avua Shakum in Avinafik Lape, his father goes out, grabs a big old baseball bat, and says, come here, kid, we gotta talk. This is Erev Yom Kippur, mind you. Amar Lay, and he screams out to him, Zonascha Nizkeres? What's the matter? Did you remember your Zona? Your mistress? Referring to his wife. Did you forget? Did you remember? Did you long for your mistress? Did you come because you have sexual urges that you couldn't control? Ikid Amri, another more gentle approach of the Gemara, a reading of it, is Amar Le Yonascha Nizkeret. So somebody must have been standing there watching the story as the two of them are fighting and saying, yeah, I heard them fighting, but I don't remember whether he said Zonascha or Yonascha. Sound very similar. Big difference. Did you remember your dove, your beloved, or your mistress? And obviously the father was very upset, and they fought, and the Gemara concludes that they argued right until Yom Kippur to the point where neither got to sit down and eat the Suda HaMafsekes going into Yom Kippur. Now, I can understand why the Gemara would explain that the father was enraged and angry and furious if he comes home because he had sexual urges. But according to the second opinion of Yonascha, did you come home because you missed your beloved, darling, loving, caring, supportive wife? Let's say the answer is yes. That's a reason to get upset? I think that's a noble reason. I think that's it's a beautiful shot. I came home because I wanted to see my wife before Yom Kippur. So why would he have gotten upset according to that interpretation? So one shot, and there are several, but one shot that we can suggest is that the father understood that in order to be truly successful in one's learning, there's a certain formula, as we'll talk about shortly, a certain formula that's required. And part of the secret sauce that you need is to not interrupt your learning. And the father was upset because you just broke that consistency because you left the base medrash, you came home, and now it all stopped. And even though it was a valid reason, assuming it wasn't the first, a valid, beautiful, loving, emotional reason, you just gave up on the dream of what you could have become had you stayed in yeshiva. Now, we could, of course, argue with that. So, Yom Kippur ends, go back to yeshiva and learn for 30 years. You'll become a gadol adar. Like, is it that big of a deal that you came home for one day? It seems to be a little bit curious. And so, in source number 10, we're going to continue our journey into the past, because I want to take you now more into the beginning of the story as we watch it unfold before our eyes. Avos Rabbi Nosson Perek Vav tells us a story which everyone in this room is familiar with. Mahaya Tchilaso Shel Rabbi Akiva, what were Rabbi Akiva's humble beginnings? Amru ben Arbaim Shana Haya V'lo Shana Klum. He was 40 years old and studied nothing. We're talking, if you showed him an aleph or a bet, he would have said, I don't know what that is. Completely illiterate. Which means that all of us are far advanced past where Rabbi Akiva was at this point in our lives than when Rabbi Akiva started. Okay, so maybe there's more hope for all of us to become Gedolei Hador. We've got to keep working at it. At 40 years old, he knew nothing. And the Gemara goes on to tell us the story that he's walking by the water, and he sees this chiseled, hollowed stone. And he goes, my goodness, stone, that's strong, that's hard, it's firm. What chiseled away at this rock? And they answered him, well, it's based on a pasuk in Iyov that the water has the potential to carve away, right? Because it just constantly flows on the rock over and over and over, dripping on it all day long, all night long. And through that slow and steady process, and that's important, the slow and steady consistency, that's the secret sauce, remember. What happens? The rock can chisel away. To which Rabbi Akiva then has this epiphany, as it describes how Rabbi Akiva, Dan Kal V'Chomer Ba'atzim, he never went a day to yeshiva, he's already saying a Kal V'Chomer. And he says, Marach Pesel HaSakosha, just like you can have something which is soft, meaning water, that can chisel away at something which is hard like a rock. Divrei Torah, Shekashin Kibarza, the words of Torah which are as strong as iron. Alachas Kama V'Kama, how much more so will they have the ability to chisel away at my heart, which is something which is soft. It can make an impact upon me, on Basar V'Dam. Miyad Chazar Lilmo Torah. He then turned and was ready to start his journey of learning Torah. Source number 11. Where does Rachel come into the picture? And here we're about to see that her role was actually the single most important factor in all of Rabbi Akiva becoming Rabbi Akiva. And it's going to help us understand why their marriage was in fact one of the greatest in all of history. And keep in mind, a great marriage doesn't necessarily mean that we sit on the porch holding hands every night, sipping tea, watching the sunset. Sounds lovely. But Rabbi Akiva's version of a marriage is based upon shared values and dreams, as you'll see. Who was Rabbi Akiva in his early days? Rabbi Akiva Raya de Ben Kalba Savua Haba. Rabbi Akiva was the shepherd of Ben Kalba Savua. How would you like to have the name Ben Kalba Savua, son of the satiated dog? Now, obviously, his mother didn't name him that at birth. She did. She was a cruel, cruel woman. What is Ben Kalba Savua? Some of us may remember from the Gemara in Gittin that we often will read around the time of Tisha B'Av. He was a wealthy man, phenomenally wealthy. And Ben Kalba Savua was the name of the experience at his home because he had such an open home with all this wealth and food that when people came and dined in his home, you left feeling like you just were at the tea room at a Pesach program. Okay? Ben Kalba Savua, satiated like a dog. I'm stuffed, I can't eat again, at least for another 30 minutes until they open the tea room again. So that was where she came from. Incredible, phenomenal wealth. And what happens? Chazisa barte dahavat sniel male. He sees the daughter. He sees this woman. How she was number one, modest, and number two, exceptional. Amra lay. I'm sorry, she was noticing about him. And she made a proposal, and she said, So, here's the proposal. If I offer to marry you, would you go to yeshiva? Amar la'in, to which he said, yep, deal. She looked at him, seeing, I'm sorry, how exceptional he was. Would you go to yeshiva if we get married? For everything people say today about the shidduch and the shidduch crisis and the problems, imagine the vision that she had to take someone who was the last thing that she would look for in her shidduch list and say, but I see potential, not now, now he's nothing, but I see what he can become. He needs to go to yeshiva though. He agreed. And what happened? They went and eloped. They married privately. And she sent him away. Time to go learn. That is the foundation of their entire relationship. And it talked about how in the early days, they lived in a barn because her father wanted nothing to do with this relationship, this poor shepherd. His daughter, almost a prince, a princess, should marry someone of means, of wealth, of royalty, not this shepherd. So they elope, they run away, they live in a barn. The Gemara describes how they'd wake up in the morning. And listen to how tender the relationship was. Rabbi Akiva would stand and pull out the straw that was in her hair from sleeping on the floor. And so what we know is that they did have a period of life together before he went away to yeshiva, where he said, all right, we're living here, we got this barn, things are okay, I got to go to yeshiva. Problem was, if he tried to get into the mirror, even if they put him in the lowest shir, he's not going to keep up. He can't read an aleph or a beis. Forget about a pasuk or a rashi or a tosfos or any. You can't keep up. And we all know he couldn't go to Eisha Torah because that didn't exist. So where is a person supposed to go in Rabbi Akiva's time to be able to sit down at 40 years old and learn? It was a problem. He made an agreement that he's going to go to yeshiva, but there was no stepping stone to get him there. And I want to share with you a Medrash HaGadol, which most people have not heard, but it is phenomenal, mind-boggling. Amar lo ishto, this is source number 12, underlined at the end of the line. I'm not going to read all of it, but his wife says to Rabbi Akiva, lech lamad Torah, okay, we're married, we're settled. This, by the way, is how we understand when they had a period together of starting a family. It was during that time period. And they decided, now was the time for you to go to yeshiva. Problem was, Amar La, he said, Halo yisachaku alai. They're making fun of me. They're going to laugh at me if I go to yeshiva, because the only yeshiva I can go to is a gan with 3 and 4 year olds. Because there, they learn kamatz, patach, aleph, beis, gimel. That's where I need to go, but I'm going to have a bunch of kids laughing while I'm sitting on the floor trying to practice my aleph beis. So Amr lo bo lasos pela. In her wisdom, she said, let's go do something incredible. And listen to how she invests in him. She says, what is it? And she says, Amr lo lo hevi li chamor shu nizik b'chal yosav. Bring me a donkey which is injured on its spine, on its back. And zarku al nisko afar, the zarku of shchalim etzemach. And she sprinkles earth, dirt, on the back of the donkey, and plants seeds, sprouts of these garden crests, these little sprouts that are coming up off the back of a donkey. And of course, she's watering it and tending to it, and they're growing a lovely garden on the back of a donkey. And then she turns to him as a loving wife and says, oh honey, would you mind running to the market and just, you know, pick up a couple of things for me and just take the donkey, you'll bring the stuff back in the wagon. And he says, do I have to take the car? Like, this is a really embarrassing vehicle to drive around with. And she goes, yeah. So what happens? Hotziyu l'shuk yom rishon, he goes out to the market the first day, v'sachku alav, they're cracking up. Everywhere he walks, people are laughing. Yom sheni, v'sachku alav, second day, they're laughing. Yom shlishi, on the third day, lo, v'sachku alav. No one's laughing anymore because, yeah, they saw it. That was yesterday's news. It went viral yesterday. Now no one cares anymore. Amra lo, lechu l'mat Torah. She says to him, now go learn Torah. Hayom yisachku l'machar lo. Today they're going to laugh at you. Tomorrow they won't. Yom shlishi yom uzem en agenu. On the third day, they say, yeah, this is normal for us. So there's a 40-year-old with a beard sitting on the floor with three-year-olds practicing alephes. That's not funny. That's normal. She understood he had pride, even as a lowly shepherd. And she nurtured him and she invested him because she understood there was a dream and a vision that she saw something in him. And he had a commitment, but he didn't know how to make that commitment come true. Halach v'yashav lo eitzel melamed tinokos, he went and he learned together with those students, those kids. Amar lo Rebbe lamdeinu Torah, teach me. Kasav lo aleph beis. Rabbi Akiva learned his first Aleph base. Aleph Taf, Birchas HaMazon, Torah's Kohanim. And it goes on and on. He knew nothing until he sat on the floor with the children and was able to learn because his wife had the vision, the brilliance, the genius to be able to take him by the hand and help him to get the stepping stones he needed. Now we fast forward to back to the end of the story. He went, he came back, he went again 24 years later. And what happens? He returns with 24,000 students. And his wife hears this whole commotion. Everyone's coming to town and she's trying to break through the crowd. And she finally gets to the center, to Rabbi Akiva. She falls on the floor of the Gadol Hador. And she starts weeping and kissing his feet. And what happens? You've got the bodyguard standing there, the shamash, who says, hey, lady, can't touch the Gadol Hador, get away. And Amar Lahu, and he says, Shavkua, leave her alone. Sheli v'shalchem shelo. What I am, what all of you are, is all because of this woman. And we see the Rabbi Akiva who stood up for v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, who was giving proper hakaras hatov to his wife. It still doesn't help us understand why he couldn't walk in the door 12 years earlier and then turn around the next day and go to yeshiva. He would have still become Rabbi Akiva, right? But now is when we understand that the only reason he went to yeshiva was because his marriage was built on fulfilling the dream of his wife. What might have happened had he come home in the middle, as we saw the story of Rav Yosef when he came home early, his father picks up a baseball bat. Because you lose, what's the secret sauce? The consistency in your learning. As the Sefer Or Shraga goes on, I won't read it inside, but he talks about the importance of a person having constant learning, non-stop. And the mashal he gives in the end of the source, he says, imagine a person has a kettle of water and you heat up the water and you turn it right before it starts to boil and then you take it off the fire, you let it cool. And you return it to the fire. You do the same thing. And right before it's about to boil, you take it off. And you do that again and again and again and again. You can do it 1,000 times, but if you keep taking it off before it's going to boil, it'll never boil. And the nimshal is that Rabbi Akiva could have gone to yeshiva back and forth and back and forth. But he needed to reach a boiling point, and it was only through his ability to have the constancy in learning, without interruption, without stopping, that he was able to then take himself to a higher level. What would have happened had he walked in the door after 12 years and he wasn't at a boiling point? His wife would have looked at him and said, did you not listen to me? Did you not respect what I'm sacrificing? That I gave everything so that you can become the Gadol Hador, not to become the number three or the number two? Why are you home? Why are you disrespecting me? Why are you undermining the sacrifice and the commitment that I'm making to you? And Rabbi Akiva's biggest gift that he could have given to his wife was to show that our marriage is built on a shared dream. It was built on respect. It was built on a love, on a potential that she saw in him. There's a series of books and of research by Dr. John and Julie Gottman. I highly recommend anything by the Gottmans. He's actually a Shomer Shabbos fellow in Seattle, Mordechai John Gottman. And he runs the Gottman Institute, where he basically has worked with couples for decades. And he writes in a lot of his research that he's gotten to the point that he's so accurate that he can spend about 90 seconds talking to a couple and with 95% accuracy tell you whether or not they're going to end up getting divorced in the next 5 years. And he's that good. And so all of his books talk about marriage and relationships. And he tells the following story, how he once walked into a major publishing house to pitch his books. And the executives didn't want to give him the time of day. Another self-help book, that's what the world needs. And the executive said, I'll give you one sentence. If you can tell me in one sentence why I should sit and consider your book, what it's about, then you'll get my attention. Otherwise, I'm walking out. And Dr. Gottman stroked his beard and took a deep breath. And he looked up at this executive in his suit and said, Sir, do you know the dreams and support the dreams of your spouse? And with that, the executive walked out and slammed the door. Dr. Gottman was frustrated and he was upset, closed up his books and stood up, about to walk out. A moment later, the door opens. And the executive walks in with tears in his eyes and said, How did you know to say that? I said, What do you mean? He said, I've read a million books on marriage. And they all talk about communication and listening and respect and all that. But the one thing that's been missing from my marriage that I feel is so stale is that my wife and I started off at the beginning building our relationship on a dream. One day, this is what we're going to be. Look to the future. And you know what happens? Life happens. Life happens. And so you put that aside because you got a mortgage to pay and you got kids to raise and carpools to do. And what Dr. Gottman was suggesting is to live a life where the only thing that's on the first thing on the forefront of your radar is always remembering, how can I support the dreams of my spouse? It's not a question of, should I sacrifice? It's a question of, please let me sacrifice. No, let me sacrifice. No, I want to sacrifice, because you're each longing, pining to give to the other so that you can help make the other one's dream into a reality. And as we started at the beginning, it's not about the ledger. It's not about keeping score to see who's done more for the other person. That's not a healthy relationship. It's the Rebbe and Mrs. Akiva paradigm of saying, I live to show you that your dream could come true. And in this case, the dream that she had was to see her husband become the Gadol Hador. There's a lot more that we can say, but we're almost out of time. I want to just point to source number 16 and source number 18. There's a halacha in the Rambam that tells us, "V'chein tzavucha chamim shiyeh adam mechabedes ishto yoser megufo v'yohava kigufo." You should love your wife as you love yourself, but respect her more than you respect yourself. There's no doubt that Rabbi Akiva, the champion of v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, that applies to your wife as well, that he loved his wife. I'm sure that there were nights he just laid in bed saying, I want to go home, but I can't do that to my wife. It would kill her if I walked in the door today. And for all I know, every night he stayed up and said, I want to go home, I want to go home. But mechabedes ishto, he had to be mechabedes wife more than himself. He had to say, I need to give her the respect of helping fulfill her dreams. And the other side to that, in source 18, halacha chaf from the Rambam, chin tzavu chacham ala isha, shti mechabedes es bala, v'yoser medai, that a woman should respect her husband how much? Just a little more than he actually needs. I'll let you digest that and think about it as you will. In the concluding makar, a sentence from the wonderful book by Rabbi Reuben Volk on Jewish marriage, a halachic ethic,
He states the ideal relationship between man and woman is one of interdependence. An interdependence implying uniqueness rather than sameness. That husband and wife do not have to be clones. They don't have to both enjoy things. Students will come into my office and say, well, I want to date a girl who enjoys roller coasters like I do. To which I say, hey, how many hours of your life of the next 70 years are you two going to be spending sitting strapped into a roller coaster? What matters is not that you do the same things, but that you can respect that you each want different things, and that you could be tolerant, patient, understanding, loving, and supportive of the fact that I want to go this direction in life, I want to go that direction in life, and we can make it work. I've had couples that I've worked with where one, let's say they were both coming from a non-observant background, and one became Shomer Shabbos and the other one wasn't. And the fights in the marriage, while they looked like they were religious fights, they're not religious fights. They're marriage-based, they're emotional-based, they're maturity-based. Because if you have this ideal of saying, I support your lifestyle and you support my lifestyle, any couple could make it work. And that's what Rabbi and Mrs. Akiva showed us. Not to suggest I want to bless my daughter with a marriage that she would spend decades apart from her spouse, but I want to bless my children to have a marriage that's based upon the fact that they can help make the dreams of their spouses to come true. We should all be zocheh to have such wonderful relationships. Amen.